Hello there, welcome to the Tech Means Business podcast. This is a series of podcasts where I talk to interesting folk from the worlds of technology and business, specifically today, actually, the world where technology, business and medicine come together. I'm really pleased today to be talking to a couple of representatives from a company called Prospection. Prospection are based in Australia. And what the company does, I think, is really fascinating. It pulls together real-world data about patients and treatments, and it brings all this information together from disparate sources and disparate areas of treatment for each patient, and then analyzes it, and if you like, churns that analysis in order to produce some outcomes. Now, those outcomes can be used in clinical settings, or perhaps they could be used for pharmaceutical research, or perhaps commissioned by healthcare providers who want to plan services and staffing better, for instance. Obviously, there's a great deal more to it than that, and it's quite a contentious area, of course. Data anonymity in healthcare is absolutely a hot topic, as rightly it should be. So hopefully we can unpick some of these issues today with my two guests from Prospection. First of all, I've got Peter Cronin. He's co-founder and head of data and partnerships at Prospection. Also the founder of Prospection, Eric Chung, who's plain old CEO of the company. So welcome to you both. And Peter, if I could begin with you, could you just give us a quick potted biography of your career to date?
Peter Cronin, I'm a 50-something-year-old Kiwi doctor, so I've been living in Australia for 20 years. I went to med school after having cancer in my 20s and wanted to, that sort of led me down the path of being interested in healthcare. And so, you know, always had a very sort of strong affinity personally with sort of the mission of healthcare. And then moved to Australia around the time of the Sydney Olympics, and I worked a lot in intensive care, did an MBA, and during my MBA I met up with a young man called Eric Chung, and we both liked the cut of each other's jib and wanted to do something together post MBA. And we had been looking at the sort of macro theme of data, and that sort of led on to Prospection.
And Eric, my laser gaze falls on you now. Give us a bit of biography about you, please.
I'm Eric Chung. I'm a technologist, engineering background, living in Sydney, Australia. I started out doing an undergrad in computer engineering and programming robots to play soccer and working on AI before leaving and working for technology consulting companies and sort of helping other companies build out what their technology is before I wanted to go down the path of being an entrepreneur, which is what my parents did. And so that was sort of something that was very familiar and aspirational for myself. And so left work and went back to do an MBA with the hopes of learning more about business and eventually starting a business, which is where I met Peter. And like similar to what Peter said, like we instantly liked each other and just hit it off and worked very much closely together throughout our MBA and post MBA school that led to us starting Prospection together.
And Eric, I did my best, I guess, to introduce Prospection at the beginning of this podcast, but perhaps you could do a bit of a better job for us and give us a rundown of what Prospection does day to day.
So Prospection analyzes healthcare data for millions of different patients. So essentially, we work in the category of what's called real-world evidence. And to give an example, we might look at, say, 100,000 patients that have had prostate cancer. And we'll analyze what happens to those patients over time. So what tests do they get? What treatments do they have? What drugs do they end up taking? And so we'll analyze and follow those patients through maybe 10 years of their treatment history. So which is one of the keys of what Prospection really specializes in, sort of looking longitudinally over time what patients do.
Yeah, you use the phrase their longitudinal data. And I think that's an important one, isn't it? In that throughout most people's lives, there's very little joined up data that links treatment to treatment. So you might see your GP and you might go and see a specialist and then you might go and see an osteopath. And very rarely does that data actually join up. And that's kind of what you guys do, isn't it, at Prospection, that definition of longitudinal data. That's where you work.
Yeah, well, longitudinal essentially just means over time is one of the keys. So rather than looking at points in time, or if you go and see that your doctor right now, it's sort of the doctor sort of sees you at that point in time, and they might ask about your history. And then when it comes to data analytics, what we can do is follow a patient over time to see what has happened in the past and what does that do sort of to that patient's treatment in the future. And the example you gave is absolutely one of them. As in, so if I'm a prostate cancer being treated, I'll go and see my GP for some things, and then I may go see a specialist, and then I'll go to a hospital and then make some claims on my health insurance, and the government will pay for some things. And what's really powerful is essentially being able to follow patients through that journey. What happened at the GP? What happened at the hospital? What happened with the specialist? What happened sort of after that? And how did that change your outcome? Which is one of the great things that we're able to do and gain insight from following that patient through all those different sort of interactions with healthcare specialists and healthcare system, and to be able to look at that for insights as to what works best for the patient.
So, Peter, I'll turn to you now as the clinician here, talking specifically about pharmaceutical research. Now, when I think about research done by pharma, I always think about, I don't know, developing new drugs, maybe. And there's usually a degree of testing on patients. And it'd be a good idea, I guess, if that could be minimised, so much the better. But as well as new drugs testing, what kind of use cases do pharmaceutical companies have for longitudinal data?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when we think about, you know, the development of a new medicine, there tends to be kind of three main parts to it. One is, you know, in the lab. The next part is really the clinical trial phase. And then the last phase is really once the drug, you know, gets registered and is in the market or being used, it's been registered and is often, you know, reimbursed. And we tend to get involved increasingly in the clinical trial phase, maybe phase two or phase three. So companies want to understand or find patients that could go on to clinical trials. They also want to understand, you know, they might have a promising medicine, or that they want to know what is the current treatment landscape and how are patients currently being treated. And then if a drug needs to be registered or reimbursed, so if you think about in the US, it's the FDA. In Australia here, it's the PBAC. I think in the UK you have, you know, NICE. You have to provide information for health economics and for health technology assessments to various regulatory authorities, so data can be used then to support it. And what's useful, say if we had a breast cancer drug that was a second-line drug, we would be able to use longitudinal data to be able to actually look at for those breast cancer patients that are only second-line, you know, drugs. So they've been on one set of drugs and they need to move to a second line, we call it, a second lot of treatments. We can look at a cohort of patients who meet that criteria, which is aligned, say, with a clinical trial, and we can look at the treatment landscape and sort of look at the number of patients who are being treated. So, you know, longitudinal data is fantastic at looking at different cohorts, looking at their journey over time, also, and looking at sort of the outcomes for specific patients.
Yeah, from what little I understand, it's the sifting of the data, isn't it, that's where things get incredibly complex. Because, you know, if you've had, say, I don't know, three treatments for a particular condition, there will be very different from three treatments that maybe other people have had for a similar and yet related condition. So from a research point of view, that's the challenge, isn't it? It's the sifting through the data.
Yeah, I think that's where companies like Prospection you know, where I think we do add value, because we sort of are an intersect in some ways between people who, you know, data holders and people who want to ask and answer different questions, be it patient groups or, you know, pharmaceutical companies or, you know, or research institutes or you know, other, you know, researchers. And so we have, you know, particular expertise in working with longitudinal data sets, and we can do that at scale, and we can do that across, you know, large complex data sets using our sort of technology background, as Eric sort of talked to earlier. And so we can then, we can have algorithms and approaches, which mean that we can sift through large data sets and provide insights a lot quicker than some other alternatives. So, you know, the gold standard in healthcare is generally been sort of clinical trials and the, you know, randomized clinical, you know, controlled trials. Now that can be good for, you know, answering certain questions, but clinical trials tend to be done on quite a narrow population group. When we're able to look at larger population sets of people in the real world, you get a much larger and pragmatic data set, which allows you to see what actually happens in the real world on who across a much wider group of patients. So it's fantastic that with the digitization of healthcare, we're now getting more and more of these real-world data sets which enable us to do this type of analysis.
Eric, if I could bring you in here as the data expert, long-term listeners to this podcast will know that my favourite headgear is made almost entirely of tinfoil, and so I feel it necessary at this point to bring in data privacy and anonymisation. So, Eric, I guess the question really is, how do you respond to those types of concerns? I mean, for instance, if you take anonymization, if you start pulling data together, you can usually cross-correlate and at least get a decent guess as to who the anonymized data concerns. I mean, is that real-world concern, or is it just me and my habitual tinfoil hat at this point?
No, it's absolutely a concern, and it's absolutely something that, you know, we take very seriously and very careful about. But the two sort of go together in a way, as in the more you can link data sets, the more like in-depth analytics and sort of factors that you consider. And so it's sort of like this balance that you have to strive for, where if you're getting it right, then you can actually link through and use the power of it all. But that's probably the key. The key is governing all the data correctly and making sure that the use cases are all appropriate and actually the things that you're doing is in the name of better healthcare. So really it's that if you have that right level of governance, then you can really sort of tap into a power that can really help you sort of benefit the health of the nation. You talked about patient Y who might have had these three drugs or treatments before. And through a clinical trial, it might be hard to find other patients that look like that patient, where when you get all these data sets, you can and bring them together with these large data sets, we might be able to find his 1,000 patients that look like patient Y and have like the same background, the same age, the same treatments that they've had in the past. And then if you can get to those 1,000 patients, then you can run through with those 1,000 patients and see what they do next. So if there's a 1,000 Miss Ys, and if you can see, you know, 200 of them went off to do this, like treatment A, and 200 went off and did treatment B, and 200 went off and did treatment C, you get to sort of see from other patients what sort of worked well and what are the commonalities between the patients that sort of lead to good outcomes or lead to poor outcomes. And so that power comes from really being able to sort of one, get large data sets so that you have that large pool of patients, and then connecting it to other factors so that you can also see what were the other factors in that patient's journey that lead to the outcome. So you can sort of tease apart what other things that did work and other things that didn't work.
And Prospection, as I mentioned, is an Aussie company. Are you guys pulling data internationally? You know, from different parts of Europe and Asia and Australia and conglomerate at all? Or are you just kind of working generally within national boundaries at present?
Generally, we're working within national boundaries. Like we are getting data from around the world. So some of the key places would be Australia, Japan, Korea, the US, and the UK. A lot of the analysis that we do would be within the data, within that country. And that's because when we're trying to produce evidence and produce analytics, we are talking about the patients in that country. But one of the beauties is, although we're not pooling the data into one big pool, you are sort of being, we are able to learn from attributes that might be available in Japanese data sets that are not available in Australian data sets, and sort of take some of the insights from that Japanese data set and sort of supplement the Australian data set with it. Similarly, with Australian data sets, being able to use learnings and insights from those ones and supplementing other international data sets on that. To give an example, Australia being sort of a single payer government market, we get very good, clean data over the previous 15 years. And so we don't get gaps in the data. We can follow patients through the last 15 years and see what the patient's done, which is tremendously valuable when comparing to perhaps a data set in America, where because of the health ecosystem there, patients may not, where many things are paid for by insurers, patients might not stay with an insurer for 15 years. And so they'll switch between insurance companies. And so you don't get that very nice, long 15-year history to process through.
And hopefully without trivializing things too much, guys, I guess my next question would be, what are the business outcomes that a pharmaceutical company, for instance, of any size, might get from working with Prospection? I mean, the thing obviously that springs to my mind as an outsider would be shorter clinical trials on human patients, or indeed no need for clinical trials at all in some cases. Would that be the case, or would business outcomes, for want of a better phrase, be slightly different?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that I would summarize it by looking at, I think that the real world data and the work we do often complements or as a synergy to clinical trial information. So if I look at when you're getting your drug registered, you need to be able to look at and understand what is the current size of a market and, you know, of a therapy area, how many patients have been treated, say, for breast cancer, if I use that example, and put that into your regulatory information pack that you submit. So it's better information to provide, allow, you know, regulatory bodies to make hopefully better and faster decisions to support, you know, new drugs being listed faster. Secondly, when a drug is listed, is once a drug is in the market, you want to understand how that drug has been used, by who, and, you know, over a time period. And accurately being able to forecast the demand for your medicine is really important. So a really good example is, you know, with COVID, that it's affected every sector has had their supply chain affected. And we do a lot of work with real-world data to help companies do demand planning and supply chain management so that they can understand, you know, what is the uptake of their drug and the demand for their drug and where that's occurring, and so that they can manage their supply chain better. And that's the work we always do, it has a public good element to it. So when people ask, well, why do you work with pharma companies? And when I explain, well, we help ensure that there are medicines on the shelf for patients to get new medicines, it starts to make sense to people.
So, Eric, perhaps you could tell us a bit about the IT stack. If you, for instance, sat down on a Monday morning, fire up your emails, decide that you've got to get some proper work done, do some data crunching, what technology are you addressing and what are you pressing play on, as it were?
Well, that's probably a question better asked for our CTO, but effectively everything we build in-house is proprietary. We've put together a proprietary stack of the best data analytics tools that we can access. It's all really Java-based in the back end in terms of how we build our tools to be able to process 500 million patients, right? As in, and a lot of what we need to do is to be able to quickly find all those patients. So if we want to analyze through a disease, be it multiple myeloma or HIV or diabetes or hypertension, something that is sort of important is to be able to process through all those patients very quickly to pull out the key attributes to it. And so I'm very proud of what our team's put together. A lot of what they've done is sort of how do we take all those patients and annotate those patients with sort of the key events in their patient's life and to be able to generalize it so that we can process American patients, Japanese patients, Australian patients through our same tools and our same algorithms. So essentially what we're playing on is in the back end, there's a whole bunch of AI machine learning algorithms that we process through, but we make that very simple for the use in the front end. At the end of the day, what our end users get is a login to a website. It's like so that you can come through, click and point, we take care of sort of that analysis for you so that you get the insights in a graph or on a map so that you can understand how patients are treated, then get to a Google Map interface, essentially, where everyone's very familiar with that, and find the patients that might not be on the right treatment so you can find out how to address them.
So what about the future? I'm thinking really about the data sets you work with, how they might change, and also where you might operate coming up.
So in terms of the data sets we work with, you know, we will continue to advocate for, you know, larger and better data sets, working with government, commercial, and, you know, research data sets, and also being able to link those data sets so we can look more effectively at outcomes for patients. So I think continue to advocate for the access and enablement of data to enable us to do our work is one thing we will continue to do. And then secondly, I think, you know, we have been fortunate enough to have a strong base in Australia and expand that out into Asia Pac, and we will continue to be looking to provide, you know, Asia-wide solutions for our clients. But I think broadly we want to be also expanding from regional into more, you know, global work with US and UK and European opportunities.
Thanks, Peter. Eric, I'm going to throw the same question to you now. Unfortunately, you thought you might have escaped, but it's not to be. What's coming down the pipeline for you in terms of prospection for the next 2 or 3 years from your point of view?
Yeah, so from my point of view, I mean, if I zoom back, there's essentially four things that prospection try to work on. And so overall, our vision and what we're trying to achieve is to put the right patient on the right treatment. And the four steps that we go through broadly to do that is, one, find the right insight about the patient. So how is the patient being treated today? Then two, actually help find those patients. So find the patients that could possibly be on a better treatment. Three, sort of produce the evidence and the insight to provide to the doctors to essentially change their prescribing behaviors. And then once you've produced that evidence, four, get it in the doctor's hands. And so getting it in the doctor's hands, maybe through their software at their point of care with the patient. So at macro, over the next 3 years, it's essentially how do we switch, how do we move towards that direction? Because overall, we understand that in healthcare, the sort of rule of thumb of 60-30-10, only 60% of patients are actually on a effective ideal treatment. 30% of patients are on suboptimal treatments that might be not the best for their care or not the best financial outcome for them. And then 10% of patients are actually on patients that are on treatments that are harmful. And so really sort of prospection's vision over the next 2-3 years is to help progress that. If we can go through that 1, 2, 3, 4, produce the insight, find the patient, produce the evidence, get it in the doctor's hands. That's sort of what we're hoping to do from a geographical perspective is what Peter talked about. And then from an analytical perspective is sort of what Ricky might be working on to produce that. And from a product perspective is part of what we're working on so that it becomes easier to use, so that we remove some of the mystery and the scariness around longitudinal data and algorithms, such that you get an easy to use tool so that people can concentrate on actually helping improve patient outcomes.
Well, tragically, we are running out of time, so I'm going to have to draw things to a close there. There's absolutely loads to talk about, and a really interesting area, I think, for our listeners, and certainly for me personally. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to have another look at this area of medical data, pharmaceutical research, and the like, and the way that technology is deployed in these particular industries. It's a particular interest to me, always has been, and has been so for many years. So personally, great number of thanks going out to Peter Cronin and Eric Chung, who are the co-founders of Prospection. So thank you both very much indeed. And thank you too for our listening public out there. I hope you've enjoyed yourself as much as I have today. And I hope that you can join us next time on the Tech Means Business podcast. And so, as usual, as I say, bye for now.